It is Friday, September 27th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. The AMP, Arkansas Music Pavilion, presents ZZ Top Friday, October 4th. This classic rock trio will perform a span of hits dating back 40 years. Tickets and more information are available at amptickets.com or 443-5600.
Ahead on Ozarks, Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com talks to me about a bounce up in housing construction figures in northwest Arkansas and the tough decisions some cities and counties in the area will have to make when it comes to paying for infrastructure in the future.
And later this hour, National Park Radio plays for us inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
But first, meetings and conversations are continuing in an effort to find common ground to avoid skyrocketing premiums for nearly 47,000 public school employees in Arkansas. Governor Beebe says he is willing to call a special session to address the $58 million insurance deficit, but only if lawmakers and school officials can agree on a plan. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas has been talking with many of those involved.
Sometime in about the next week, we will probably start to see some plans emerge, written down on paper as just a starting point for how the teacher insurance pool might get it shipwrighted. House Speaker Davey Carter has charged the heads of the insurance and education committees of both the House and the Senate to come up with a framework of a plan that they can start working on as early as the end of next week.
A final date for announcing a short-term fix for the troubled teacher insurance pool is October 15th. That's when state employee benefit managers must know if policymakers have hard numbers for shoring up the program.
The Connecting Arkansas Internet Conference is being held in Little Rock this week to discuss broadband options for residents who have limited internet access. The event, being attended by several state business leaders, is dedicated to finding options for rural Arkansans and enabling access for grade school students, many of whom may not have reliable service at home. AmericanRural.org founder Diane Smith says internet access is also beneficial for entrepreneurship.
Small businesses are the engine of our economy. There's no doubt about that, but new businesses grow the most jobs. And what new businesses need is money, brains, and broadband. And so I want communities across Arkansas to engage in that discussion of how to get them those three assets.
The conference, headed by Connect Arkansas, continues through today.
Students in Arkansas are improving their performance on advanced placement tests, according to information by the College Board, the national organization responsible for advanced placement, SAT, and ACT testing. State education officials report the number of students taking advanced placement exams is up by more than 6.5%, and student test scores were also up in 2013. Mary Catherine Stein oversees AP programs for the state's education department.
The last few years, our participation rates have gone up each year, and also the number of students making qualifying scores at 3, 4, and 5 have increased. Because the state has invested in paying for the exams and invested in a lot of teacher training in advanced placement and pre-AP teaching, we've had remarkable results from students.
According to the College Board, the most popular AP exams in Arkansas in 2013 were English language, English literature, U.S. history, world history, and calculus. State education officials note every high school in the state offers students a minimum of 4 AP classes in the core areas of English, social studies, math, and science.
The nursing program at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith has received a sizable contribution from a state official. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel yesterday gave UAFS administrators a check for $50,000 to go toward the school's Bachelor of Science in Nursing program. The money will be used to purchase equipment for the program's simulation lab, which will include electronic dummies on which nursing students practice before conducting clinical work on live patients. The money is part of a settlement the state received from pharmaceuticals manufacturer GlaxoSmithKline to resolve allegations that the drug maker unlawfully promoted its diabetes diabetes drug Avandia. The school's bachelor's nursing degree program, which began in 2008, has replaced the school's two-year nursing program and currently includes 650 students.
The University of Arkansas's Fulbright College also has reason for celebration. The college today announced it's received a $3.1 million gift from the Roy and Christine Sturgis Education Trust in Dallas. The gift helps the college establish an international honors program, which will support 10 fellowships for highly specialized study abroad and internship experiences, allowing select Fulbright College undergraduate honors and graduate students to be more competitive for employment in international relations, academics, private industry, and public service jobs. The new program will complement the existing Sturgis Fellowships and Study Abroad Research Grants, and it will also help the university reach a goal of providing at least one-fourth of its graduates with study abroad opportunities.
Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the mid-60s. Partly sunny tomorrow with a 70% chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, and highs from 79 in northwest Arkansas to 84 in the Arkansas River Valley. Showers and possibly a thunderstorm are likely tomorrow night with lows from 61 in northwest Arkansas to 68 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com. Happy Friday to you, sir.
Yes, it's always happy Friday. Those words, as we've said before, go well together.
Of course, thecitywire.com covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire listening area. Let's start with business and USA Truck.
Here we go again. in less than 2 years, the company, the truckload company out of Van Buren, has had essentially a hostile takeover attempt, this time by Phoenix-based Knight Transportation. It's a Knight offered a $9 per share bid. It's about a $242 million deal total when you include the debt that Knight would cover. But USA Truck has said, you know, we're not interested. And, they think there's more value in the company. You know, they're in the midst of a turnaround. They hired this John Simone back in February. He's known in the trucking industry for kind of a turnaround artist. And there's a little bit of some drama here. Knight said that, you know, they wanted a response by September 6th. Van Buren responded, USA Truck responded and said, look, we don't like the value. We think it's worth more than $9 a share. We're more than willing to sit down with you and talk to you why we think it's worth more. Apparently Knight sent a letter saying, well, no, we're not interested. You know, if you don't want to take the offer, we're not interested. And then Knight turned around yesterday on Thursday and put out this proposal, made it public. So there's already a little bit of a bad blood between the two companies now. The officials of Van Buren-based USA Truck think they've been kind of or they think Knight's misleading the public about the process. But what's critical here, Kyle, is if this goes through, and I think it's iffy, but if it goes through, the potential to lose, you know, at least, you know, more than 400 good-paying corporate headquarter jobs there in Van Buren, that's that would be a big hit.
And this can play out over months, right?
Yes, it could. I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, Knight has many options. They could try to take it directly to the shareholders. Their Van Buren USA Truck has a poison pill provision, and I have I've asked an analyst, a trucking industry analyst who knows a lot more about these type of provisions than I do, to look into this and provide some particulars. And I hope we at the CityWire hope to report on that early next week, if not today. But that would prevent Phoenix theoretically from acquiring too many more shares. They already own 8%. They already own 8% of USA Truck shares. But, yeah, this could drag out. You remember Celadon?
Mm-hmm.
That was about a six-month process before Celadon finally said, well, we're not interested. But USA Truck has struggled. I mean, if they lose money this year, it'll be five consecutive years of losses, and it's just been a tough market for them.
There is a spike in housing construction numbers in northwest Arkansas, which I guess is not really a surprise.
No, it's not a surprise. Although, we've talked back 2006, 2007. I guess the point is, do we did we learn our lessons from 5 or 6 years ago?
But, right.
You know, the four major cities in the two counties, in Benton and Washington counties, their housing permits in August was up. Were up 49%. The number of permits was up 49%, and the value was about $41 million, and that's compared to just a little over $27 million same month last year. You have Fayetteville; their home permits were up 59% in August. Bentonville was up 55%. Rogers was up 41%. Springdale up almost 11%. I mean, they're back to building homes left and right. The good thing, though, still is the home sales are solid. We're not seeing a huge uptick in inventory. So hopefully between the banker community and the construction community and investors, there'll be a little bit more of a focus on the supply and demand component this time around.
Well, if they're building houses in Northwest Arkansas, they're not building a new jail in Crawford County. Everyone talks about it. Most people want it, but no one knows how to pay for it.
Well, I think they know how to pay for it. I think there's some political concerns with mentioning it. You know, Crawford County is a politically conservative town, fiscally conservative town, and you know, they're having problems with overcrowding. I mean, the jail is already sending inmates to Scott County, to Washington County,
and that costs money.
Yeah, that's not cheap. And but you know, we tried to contact Crawford County Sheriff Ron Brown for the story we did, and he wasn't. I think he's reluctant to talk because, you know, one of the only significant way to raise money to build a new jail is through tax increase. And you know, right now the mood among the public is they don't want to hear that. And I think the county judge and the county sheriff are reluctant to suggest what it's really going to take to build this out. And you know, Brown before has talked about around a $22-24 million jail expansion. You know, he placed that, I think, before the Crawford County Quorum Court last November, and it just, you know, sit there. It didn't. There was nobody wanted to touch that. But at some point, you know, if they keep this up, there will be a court. I mean, that's the potential that a court can tell them how they're going to have to raise money and what they do. So hopefully at some point the officials there will, you know, will step up before the courts do.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I have been told by people in the past that sales tax numbers, once they get to 10%, it's hard to get anything over that past. And you look at, there are counties in the region that are close to that, and as they continue to grow and infrastructure needs continue to grow, there's going to be some interesting dialogue in the next decade or so around here about how to pay for things.
Yes, you run out of wiggle room real fast, and I think that's where you are in Crawford County. I mean, if their rate were to go, they would have one of the highest rates among counties in the nation, not just in the state, but in the nation. You know, that's what they're up against there in Crawford County. I mean, their current rate is 9.5%. Part of that is Van Buren. Sales tax increase recently. Part of that is going to come off in 3 to 5 years. I forget the exact time frame, but it's going to be tough. I mean, between millage or sales tax increase, it's going to be tough for them to figure out how they pony up for a jail. And again, it's not like they're asking for a luxury item or anything. I mean, that's something that they have to provide for.
Finally, the cyclists from Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue in Northwest Arkansas have not been gone a week yet, and there are people in Fort Smith saying, hey, let's have our own rally.
Well, and they've been, you know, 2005, 2006, they've been bantering that about, you know, when it became clear that Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue was a real deal, a big deal, and folks were saying, you know, why can't we have some of that, you know, in the Fort Smith area. But there's some of it already here. I was reminded after we posted the story that a lot of these folks stay in hotels, especially in Van Buren, but even in Fort Smith area. And, you know, hotels, as far as we have heard, is Russellville. So, you know, when you have 400, 450,000 people at an event there in Northwest Arkansas, they can't all stay in hotels in Washington and Benton County. But, yeah, Dennis Snow, he's a motorcycle enthusiast, he produces Thunder TV, which was the official TV show. I didn't realize there was an official TV show, Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, but that was it. But he says that you know, Garrison Avenue in downtown Fort Smith is a perfect venue for a motorcycle rally. He's been involved in rallies in one form or another since 1977, and he believes that there could be kind of an offshoot of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue that could then lead to a unique rally for Fort Smith that could be held in the spring. And we talked to Colson Burns with Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, and he was very positive, said, you know, that they'd love to work with them because, you know, they want to expand Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, and he said it only makes sense to expand it, you know, to other geographically adjacent cities. So that we could see some interesting developments with that in the near future.
All right. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the CityWire.com that covers business, politics, motorcycles, and more. You can find new stories every day at the CityWire.com. Michael, thank you so much.
You are welcome, Kyle.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, we preview the 2013 King Biscuit Blues Festival that happens in Helena, Arkansas, October 10th through the 12th. Headliners, Marsha Ball, Robert Cray, Greg Allman, and more. That's the Generic Blues Show right here on KOAF every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
It's understandable if you've become confused about the construction, the groundbreakings, and the building dedications on the University of Arkansas campus in recent years. There has been a building boom. Yesterday, it was time for the rededication of Ozark Hall. It marked the end of another project on the campus. A 21,000-square-foot addition to Ozark Hall was part of the project, and it will be home for the University of Arkansas's Honors College. And it returns a wing of the venerable hall to an original footprint. The project was designed by Robert A.M. Stern Architects of New York City. Yesterday, Gary Brewer and Eric Silich from the firm came to the Anthony and Susan Hoyt News Studio just a few hours before the formal dedication. I asked them about the process of renovating and adding to a building that is located in the heart of the oldest part of campus. Gary Brewer told me the architects had a solid structure to begin with when the project started.
Those buildings were built in a time when it was probably difficult to build buildings and expensive to build buildings, but they were built with a vision and a high sense of material, you know, all of the stone. And they were also planned in such a way that they were somewhat flexible. Well, today we plan buildings that they're so particular that you wonder in 100 years how you would use them. The original buildings at the University of Arkansas, they're more like mittens instead of gloves because they can accommodate lots of different hands in the way that maybe a glove can't. So they it's easy for them to repurpose and reuse in the future. And one might imagine that Ozark Hall 75 years from now might be used in a different way than it is now. And that's the sort of ultimate way to do a sustainable building.
So you have to think about that somewhat. I mean, you are building for an opening for the Honors College in the early part of this century, but you're hoping that this building is used far beyond that.
Yeah, well, I would say that one of the things that we engage our clients in is a discussion of not just the here and now and the immediate, but how do they imagine growing and what will their futures be and how will their new buildings accommodate that.
Was there a sense that this was completing a project too? Because when you took on this part of the building, there were two-thirds of what had been an existing building there and sort of this funky courtyard that wasn't a courtyard.
Yeah, I mean, we went to the original master plan, which was from the 20s, I believe, Jamieson and Spurl, and they had, you know, the building had been shown as a full build out with a courtyard, although it was flipped around 180 degrees. And we kind of talked about that early on. Is it the right thing to complete that? Is there something else that should happen? Is there some notion that maybe you should make a donut out of it type of thing? But the original master plan had some really great ideas and set up great spaces, so we kind of went with that.
There are a lot of new buildings and spaces on the University of Arkansas campus that have been built or are being built in the last few years. Most of them are in footprints that people don't remember, so it instantly strikes them, if they haven't been on campus for 10 or 20 or 30 years, that that's new. There are going to be some people who come back to campus who haven't been here for 30 years and will maybe not immediately realize instantly that this is new because it's on the same footprint that they may have experienced in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah, I mean, there was a conscious thing to make it really blend in. If you go in sort of like an untrained eye and you go look at the building, that you don't necessarily know where the seam is. And for people who kind of, as your memory fades and you say, I mean, if they were in that building a lot, they'll probably remember it more. But if they always just walked by it, they wouldn't even necessarily remember it that well. But, you know, there's a difference between making sort of a statement of here I am and everybody look at me and sort of a statement of here we are and let's fit in. And it's, I mean, it's a beautiful sight up there. So it's
well,
nice.
I would also add to that, you know, that part of campus and a building like that for our kind of approach to architecture, it's not so much just about who we are and what we think about architecture. It's about the University of Arkansas's brand. You know, different schools have different architectural brands, and they have shown that when a prospective student and their parents come to campus, one of the biggest aspects of how they determine where to go is what does the campus look like? And it's typically the historic part of campus. And so our sense of adding to that building was to emphasize your architectural brand and what it means to be at the university. You know, some of the buildings that came after the historic buildings, you know, there's a few good ones, but there's a lot of buildings that some people might think of as mistakes, you know, and there is something about classic architecture, be it classical or Gothic, that has a staying power that maybe experimental architecture doesn't. I mean, in a way, you look at some of those newer buildings, and they're like lapses in judgment in the way that you had a bad haircut in the 1970s. But you can't just grow your hair out like you can, you know, in comparison to getting rid of a building.
You can fold those bell bottoms away.
Yes.
You mentioned that seam between the old and the new. Mm-hmm. How important is it that it be seamless, or is it important that it be? I mean, do you want people to understand there's a conversation going on between eras or not? Or is that even something you think about?
I mean, I think we talked about it at various stages. There's the practical aspect of it. How do you just practically make that seam? But the original building was already two pieces, you know, and there was, I think the north wing was, I guess the east wing was built, and then the north wing was built after that. I think that's the order. And it's hard to know exactly where the seam is, and you can see some of the details if you really pick through it. And it didn't seem critical to distinguish that part of the building from itself. You can see other aspects of it where it's other parts of the detailing and there's more detailing and so forth. And it was a conscious decision, I think, to say, you know, this, we're completing the building. We're not sort of.
Although it does, you know, it has the same materials. It has the same limestone. It has similar windows, but it has different ways of massing and different sort of details. I mean, I was thinking about it earlier. It's a little bit like a family in a generation. I mean, you probably look like your parents, and your parents probably look like their parents, and there's a sort of similarity between you all. But you all have your own unique characteristics. But what makes you interesting as a sort of family is what you share in common and the things that make you unique. I think that our building and its addition to the original building is part of that family, and it hopefully has shared characteristics. But I like to think it's more nuanced than just some big glass box added to it. That's a more interesting dialogue to say we're part of this family. Let's find out what we have in common, and let's have a few characteristics that make us unique.
When people were building the original buildings on this campus, they were not thinking about telephone lines, let alone fiber optic, or the fact that blackboards would be replaced by whiteboards. So at some point, this project that you've poured a lot of passion and intellect and time into, maybe it's 60 years, but something else will come along and it will be kind of, you know, manipulated or changed or goodness knows what. You okay with that?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, as I mentioned earlier, a building needs to be flexible, and it needs to be planned so that it works with its immediate uses, but that it is also flexible enough in the future. It could be used in different ways. I think that the most important thing is that it has a general high sense of quality, and that it has, I mean, working at the University of Arkansas, what I found meeting with students, faculty, staff, is that there is an overall sense of love for the historic part of the campus. And, you know, it could – someone could have easily said, well, you know, instead of restoring these buildings, it might actually be cheaper to tear them down and start all over. But it's having people love buildings that make them want to, in the future, repurpose them in ways that can be used, you know, because it's part of – it's part – those buildings are part of who they are and their identity. And so – what we added on to Ozark with the Honors College and how we restored the exterior of the building, hopefully that will be meaningful to the students, faculty, and faculty, and that in the future, that when they want to use it for a different purpose, they'll take as much care, their architects and their generation, to repurpose it in the way that we did with the university.
Gary Brewer and Eric Stillich are with the firm Robert A.M. Stern Architects of New York City. They were the lead architects for the Ozark Hall renovation on the University of Arkansas campus. The new renovated Ozark Hall was dedicated yesterday morning. I talked to Gary and Eric in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio yesterday, just a few hours before that dedication. This is Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is supported by Aurora Digital Signage, where images and videos can be instantly uploaded and displayed on multiple screens and locations, improving communication in hotels, museums, restaurants, manufacturing facilities, retail environments, and school systems. AuroraDigitalSignage.com for more information. KUAF is also supported by CertaPro Painters, serving residential and commercial clients with interior and exterior painting and interior design, deck and fence staining, and specialty finishes. Locally owned and operated by Aaron Lewis. Estimates and information at 1-800-GO-CERTA or CertaPro.com.
It is Friday, September 27th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Well, Antoinette's had a fun week.
Yes, very exciting.
She met Tusk.
I did, and that story will be coming soonish.
And I had a fun week because I got to hear three languages spoken live. Bhutanese, mm-hmm. from the country of Bhutan, Tibetan, and Cherokee.
Cherokee's not spoken often, is it?
No. They're trying to keep it alive. And that leads us into the story about the Cherokee National Youth Choir, which is going to perform tomorrow at a commemoration of the 175th anniversary of the Trail of Tears at Pea Ridge National Military Park.
Very, very excited about this.
That was a very, very long sentence. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. But I got to talk to Mary Kay Henderson, who is the director of the choir, and Kathy Sierra, who was one of the first director consultants of the choir. Cherokee was Kathy Sierra's first language.
Hmm.
It's what she learned in her home.
It's interesting.
And Mary Kay Henderson never learned it because her mother was forbidden to speak Cherokee.
Why was she forbidden?
Because culturally, it was like my aunt was forbidden to sign, even though she was deaf, because culturally it was just considered something to look down on.
Or I know there were many immigrant families in the last century from Ireland or Germany or someplace that the parents thought their children would be able to get better jobs or better mm-hmm. themselves if they only spoke English.
Mm-hmm. So imagine they take this choir, it's youth from all over northeastern Oklahoma, and they take this choir to things like Cherokee church services, where the church service still happens in Cherokee, and it's mostly older people. And they say the older people are so thrilled to see youngsters who want to learn the language because they don't want the language to die. And
sure.
So it's really cool. And one of the things that Mary Kay Henderson said that was awesome was that if you see the choir, they're all different colors of faces and all different colors of hair, because there's no requirement that you be like 136th or one whatever. You just have to be Cherokee. And so they get to see that now they look like everybody. And they look out in the audience and think, okay, I think these are all white people, but they're probably not in this area. So it should be really interesting. And I also talked to John Scott, who's superintendent of Pea Ridge National Military Park.
When does this happen?
This is all Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Elkhorn Tavern. And you can see the road where the Cherokee actually walked, where Civil War soldiers actually walked, where John Scott says he thinks probably people going off to World War I walked that road.
Hmm.
Really fascinating. And it's all free.
And it's at the Pea Ridge National Military Park tomorrow.
And some other things going on this weekend. The Edmar Castaneda Quartet.
Yes.
Opening the jazz series at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, 7 and 9 tonight. Tickets start at $11 for the late show.
And my advice is if you're still planning on going and you don't have a ticket,
don't fiddle around.
Exactly.
No pun intended. 4,000 Miles opens tonight.
Yeah, this is the quickest turnaround, I think, in Theater Squared history.
It's wow. And this is a Pulitzer Prize nominated script by Amy Herzog, not Amy Herzberg, different person.
I had to think about that for a second. I saw that and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. It's about a 21-year-old college dropout who goes to stay with grandma, who's 91 and a communist, and that must all be interesting. They call it a comedy drama, which scares me a little, but the director says that you should get a little bit of everything. And that showtimes are 7:30 tonight and tomorrow, and 2 and 7 Sunday, runs through October 13th at the Nadine Baum Studios, of course. The Arkansas-Oklahoma Fair wraps up this weekend.
Over in Fort Smith.
With, of all people, headlining tonight, Seven Dust. Seems like an odd combination to me, but okay, that's at 8 o'clock. And the Rumble on the River Demolition Derby tomorrow night at 7. All the entertainment is free with gate admission, which is $7 for adults and $4 for children 12 and younger. And a local rock band who's been around forever but hasn't been playing much lately, Hunker Down, is performing.
I haven't heard from them in a while.
Yeah, I'm excited about this.
They will be playing at the Phoenix on Dixon Street. That is tonight. Yes, yes, that is tonight. Openers, thanks for nothing. The show starts at 9 o'clock and the cover charge is $7.
All right.
Check with Kevin Kinder's report in his blog and make sure that I haven't messed that up. I believe it's tonight.
And that blog is?
NWATunedIn.com.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Think evolution was just for our ancestors? I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look at how evolution is shaping humans today. And at a time when humans influence nearly everything on the planet, is this the end of nature as we know it? All on Science Friday from NPR.
Listen to Science Friday this afternoon from 1 to 3 on KUAF.
KUAF is supported by 121 Digital Marketing, a full-service digital agency helping local businesses with their online presence. Services include reputation and social media management, mobile and desktop website design and management, press releases, search engine marketing, and optimization. 121digitalmarketing.com for more information. Support for KUAF is also provided by the 8th Annual Cherokee Art Market, featuring 130 Native American artists along with interactive cultural demonstrations held October 12th and 13th inside Hard Rock Hotel and Casino Tulsa. More information is available at CherokeeArtMarket.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. One of the earliest entries on National Park Radio's website is a post from January 7th of this year titled The Beginning. However, guitarist and lead vocalist Stefan Szabo says the band began taking shape a few years ago when he and his friend Kip Kibling would get together once a week to play music. About a year and a half ago, Stefan says he got serious about writing songs. The band has grown to include three other members, Jamie Stevens, and two of Stefan's brothers, Micah and Isaac. Although they've only been performing live for a few months, the Harrison-based band has booked shows in Arkansas as well as Colorado. Last week, Stefan, Micah, Isaac, and Kip paid a visit to the Furman Garner Performance Studio. During our conversation, Stefan explained, after creating a few good songs, the band began recording last winter.
We kind of had a goal to just come out with this little 5-song demo album that we just did totally on our own in my garage. And it was a long process of recording, because we had to just kind of learn as we went on how to do recording and how to write songs and how to arrange everything and how to get everybody's parts in order to play them good, to make a good recording. So we did that and finally started figuring out a little better after the first of the year. And so early this year in the wintertime, probably January, we were getting some really good progress, and we're got finished, I believe, in February at some point with the 5 songs that we were happy with. So then we had the CD made and printed and started just marketing online on Facebook, and we hadn't played a show. You know, we just started
You hadn't played a show, you just decided, really?
Yeah.
So the blog entry at the beginning was kind of when we were point when the mini EP album, mm-hmm. five song album was finished, and we were ready to start.
Yeah.
You know, going putting it out there to the world.
And it was close to finish. Nobody had ever heard any of our music until a couple of days before Christmas last year. I put a song out there that was close to done, The Great Divide. It's on the album. And so that was kind of just like our intro into for anybody to ever hear anything that we did. We kind of kept it like not really secret, but just didn't like put it out there at all until we had something to show. And so in the late December, we kind of started a Facebook page and shared one song, and then every couple weeks we'd share another. And eventually the CD was done after a month or two. And then we started planning to play some shows. So that's when Micah came along on our first show. Our first show was April 6th of this year. And we had issues. We didn't really have a drummer person. And he was actually, he's my brother, but you know, I have two brothers, Isaac and Micah. And Micah has his own music that he does, like as a lead, kind of like indie rock. He guitar and sings and writes songs. And so he was going to open for us at our first show, which is out at Marble Falls, Arkansas. And it ended up to where we didn't have a drummer, and last minute, with one practice, I think we decided that he was going to drum for us the night before the show. And so it was a little, too. Yeah, and he did really good. And he's not like a drummer, or at least he wasn't, you know, at that point. He's good at the drums, but his passion was like, you know, guitar and writing songs and singing. So it was interesting, but I think it gave him a good perspective, you know, because he knows like what he wants in a drummer for his band. So he was trying to be that, I think, for this band. And it was it worked out really well.
This is interesting to me because I feel like it's a little backwards from the stories I get from people. I get people, oh, we had a band, we started playing shows, and now we're going to do an EP. But you guys did the EP first.
Yeah, I think it really helped our live shows to already have an album and an internet presence, like a strong Facebook presence and a good website that Stefan made. It helped us, you know, draw. We had like over 150 people at our first little show, and it was in the small town of Harrison where live music is not the culture there. So it was, and then, you know, it's just, I think it's really helped our, you know, us progress really quickly, you know. Doing it that way, which is kind of the opposite, like you said, of what a lot of bands do.
Why did you guys decide to record it yourself? Why not? I mean, like you said, you didn't know what you were doing, so why didn't you just go find someone to help you? There are plenty of people around that could have helped,
well,
you know?
For one, we're in Harrison, so there's not a lot of opportunity for that, and also financial reasons, and it was kind of an experiment as well. We weren't sure exactly if it would turn out, and I had kind of decided if this doesn't work out with us doing it our own, and if it doesn't, we can't get it to sound good, then we'll get somebody else to help. But it ended up we worked hard on it and figured it out how to get it to sound good, and it worked out for us. But the main reason is probably just, you know, financial reasons for the most part, I would say.
You guys also did your own art for this?
Mm-hmm.
One of you specifically, or
mostly Stephen.
I did most of it. Isaac helped me a lot on the design of the text.
Stephen and Jamie, which is another member who's not here today, but he plays guitar, and then myself, we went along a little hiking trip to the Buffalo River, mm-hmm. and we took a photo of that cover there, the shot of the bluff and the river over near Steel Creek, and Stephen turned it into a he like hand traced it kind of on the computer and turned it into that artwork right there.
Yeah, because the National Park Service back in the 40s and 50s had some awesome artwork style for their posters to promote the parks, and it's in that style with the like I don't know what style you'd call it, but it's I love the artwork and I thought it'd be cool to kind of recreate that in a way. So
I have to ask about the name National Park Radio.
Yeah, it was a long process of coming up with a name. You know, we had a lot of funny ideas, and that was one that we kind of enjoyed because we grew up on the Buffalo National River, which is the first national river. It's a national park, and we kind of, you know, all enjoy the outdoors, nature, and I personally love the National Park Service, like, and all everything it has to offer for our country and just the beauty and everything, and we decided, I guess it kind of evolved from some other things into National Park Radio for one reason or another, just because of marketing reasons, because of just, you know, where we kind of were from, just the National Park Service and their, or just the National Parks of America and how we enjoy them. So, you know, we were kind of worried about NPR, too, the whole, you know, thing with NPR.
And yeah.
So we decided that when we decided on the name, we like, okay, we can have this name, but we cannot call ourselves NPR. So, because we know that NPR is, and you guys, you know.
Well, I was curious because, you know, one of the little symbols on here has a little radio mm-hmm. tower. So I didn't know if you guys had some sort of...
I noticed that was very similar to a sticker you guys had.
It is.
Yeah. And I asked Stefan if when he designed that, if he had used your stick, you know, your design as inspiration, he said he had never seen it before.
Really?
Yeah. So it's coincidence.
Okay.
It's
really funny, yeah, because I don't know. I kind of wanted it. It kind of relates to...
Sure.
I mean, the whole... What you guys do as well, except we're a band and you guys are radio. But,
sure.
We like the... I don't know. I like the idea of kind of like... In the logo that we designed, it's like the mountains, and then there's music coming out. You know, it's mm-hmm. kind of like that's kind of what we are. You know, we're just kind of alone in the mountains, and you know, trying to share our music. So,
the EP also says established 1985. Are you guys?
Yeah. That's just part of the little logo. That's our logo.
It's Stephen's birth year.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what I was wondering.
I had some. That doesn't mean much, except okay. That's when I was born. So
I assumed it was not yeah. when the band formed.
No.
But
it was when I was born that year. So
yeah. Okay.
Me and Kip were born that year.
So it's a good year. Well, this EP that you have has 5 songs on it, and I know that it was. Inspired by a couple of different things, you know, life and love, but also the nature, the surroundings that you guys grew up in. Is there a specific one that's, I don't know, maybe a love song to the your surroundings in the park or something?
Not necessarily on that CD, mm-hmm. and that's one thing that, you know, I was a little worried about, but I think we do have songs that aren't on the CD that are more in that vein of nature, you know, and loving that sort of thing. But I mean, The Great Divide is kind of one. It's kind of a weird song because it's not, it's about wanting to be somewhere else. But even though we love where we're from, you know, I wrote it, even though I love where I'm from, you know, I'd like to go. I love other places as well. Mm-hmm. So that song is kind of like just about, you know, opportunity and not being, you know, held into one place and being able to go out and explore. So I think that one is kind of similar because it talks about the Great Divide and the mountains and everything like that out in like Colorado and whatnot. It was Colorado's kind of inspiration for that song. So,
well, a number of the songs on the EP deal with relationships. Is there a particular relationship that inspired these songs, or is it just sort of?
I think most of the songs on there, I probably did most of the lyric writing. And they're not necessarily true stories to my life. Whenever I started writing music for Sirius, I decided that I couldn't just, you know, write from my own experiences because I haven't experienced a lot of interesting things. So I'm like, I had to kind of put myself in other people's shoes or just imaginary characters, you know, and try to look at life or certain situations through their perspective. You know, I mean, but they're all relatable. A lot of them are relatable to a lot of people, I think. And that's was one of my goals in writing a lot of these songs is write them to so people can relate to them, you know, in their own lives and not necessarily, you know, true stories of what I've gone through. But I mean, parts of it, of course, are. But I think most of them, or at least a lot of the songs, I want to, you know, encourage people to just like. Keep going and you know and be you know find the joy in life and keep on going despite you know hard times. So
was that inspired by a specific hard time for you or anything like that, or just?
I mean, not really. I mean, we've grew up, you know, in hard times. At least my family has, and you know, with a single mom with 5 boys, and we kind of have struggled, you know, all our lives. I think most of us, you know, are continuing to like try to. You know, get out of those struggles, but you know, so it's probably a lot has to do with, you know, growing up, and it feels like we're always struggling with certain things, or at least me, with you know, relationships or, you know, there's financial hardships, you know, all the time. And so it's almost I don't know. I wanted to write them just to encourage people that, you know, that might be going through hard times in relationships or whatever it may be. So
are you the main songwriter?
Yeah, pretty much. Isaac and Kip were with me developing some of these songs, and they had a lot of input in a lot of them. But lyrically, on the ones on the album, I think for the most part, I've done most of that. We do have other songs that aren't on the album that Isaac's done all the lyrics for and everything, and then we have some other songs that we've all contributed a little bit lyrically, but for the album, yeah, I'm pretty much the songwriter for the most part.
Well, you guys brought some instruments. Do you want to play something for me?
Sure.
That'd be fun. Okay, this song's called The Great Divide, and here we go. Begins, but this old well has long been dry. I think it's time we say goodbye. I think it's time to say goodbye. I'll bring my family, bring my dogs, give my regards to friends. I'll shed these chains. It's not too late to change this story's end. We can't live like this. We can't go on. We've got to do this. It's where we belong.
That was Kip Kibling and Stefan, Micah, and Isaac Szabo, four members of the band National Park Radio. They stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio last week. There are two chances to hear the band live tomorrow. The first is at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at Lake Leatherwood Park as part of Eureka Palooza. The second show is scheduled for 9 o'clock tomorrow night at Kingfish in Fayetteville. More information is available at nationalparkradio.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We have Santa Dillard in the office.
I like that name. I really do. That makes me feel good.
Rhonda Dillard, who always comes into our studios with something to give away. And you've got two things to give away.
I know. And we normally don't do two things, but there's so many great things going on in this area right now. We had to do it. We had the opportunity. I was like, okay, let's do it.
Okay.
So, and a lot of great entries on both. So the first one we have is the Walton Arts Center 10x10 Art Series. It is a 10x10 series. They've done it the last couple of years.
Right.
Really great. 10 shows.
10 shows each. Most tickets are $10 for each.
Yes.
And it is a way to see things that maybe you wouldn't see otherwise. Some are familiar, like the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet.
Mm-hmm.
Most are not, and they're from around the world.
Absolutely, yes. And it's, the first show is coming up next week, I believe, October the
4th,
yeah,
right?
October the 4th.
Next Friday, Onda Union.
Onda Union from Inner Mongolia.
See? Yeah. Someone is going to be very lucky to have these tickets.
All right.
And they get tickets for all of the shows.
It's the whole series.
So,
two tickets for each?
Absolutely.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, thanks to the Walton Arts Center. The winner of the Walton Arts Center 10x10 2013 season is Abby Foster of Fayetteville. So, Abby, congratulations.
All right. Congratulations, yes. Abby. And what's great also about the 10x10 shows is afterwards you usually get to meet the cast or the band.
How fun.
They ask you, you know, and there are hors d'oeuvres and drinks that are passed out. It's a lot of fun. It's a great party.
Well, congratulations, and thanks to everybody who entered. So hopefully we'll do it again next year if you didn't win
all
this
right.
time.
Another series of concerts.
Yes, Fort Smith Symphony celebrating their 90th season. Can
That's
you imagine?
Right. I can't. I can't.
It seems crazy. The first show in their season this year, the 90th anniversary celebration, is next Saturday, but there are also a number of other ones, Canadian Blast, The Living Christmas Card, Fascinating Rhythms, Bonjour Paris, and The Golden Ring. So,
Speaking of international,
so it sounds like a lot of fun. So, and our winner for that is Joella Peaver of Ozark.
All right.
Hey, congratulations, Joella.
And Joella, those are not easy tickets to get.
Oh,
no.
I wouldn't think so.
Fort Smith Symphony
it
usually sells out.
Sells all
out.
The time.
Yeah.
So pair tickets to all six of those shows this year. So congratulations to both of our winners. And Rhonda, you'll be contacting them to let them know in case they didn't hear this?
I will be sending them an email in just a few moments with details.
When are you going to come back?
I will be back next Friday. You're reading my mind.
What are you giving away next week?
Well, next week are the big tickets to the Yonder Mountain Harvest Fest on Mulberry Mountain, which will
soon.
Be the second or third week in October.
It's like the 18th that
amazing
weekend.
Amazing lineup this year. I am so excited. Les Claypool. We have the Tedeschi Truck Band.
Yes.
Which is going to be...
New CD is very good, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I've not heard it. We need to talk.
Okay.
So, yes. Great. So, please go to the website right now. You're welcome to register for that. And next Friday, during the noon edition of Ozarks, if I can talk, noon edition of Ozarks, we'll be drawing that name as well.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you, guys.
The Ozark Blues Society of Northwest Arkansas's annual blues challenge is Wednesday, October 2nd from 6 until 11:30 p.m. at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. 13 acts will perform with group and solo winners competing at the 4-day International Blues Challenge on Beale Street in Memphis. More information at ozarkbluessociety.org. Mental Health America in Northwest Arkansas and the National Alliance on Mental Illness will hold its 9th annual candlelight vigil to raise awareness of mental illness Sunday, October 6th from 6 until 7 p.m. in the chapel of the First United Methodist Church at 206 West Johnson Avenue in Springdale. The event is free and open to the public. More information available at 521-1158.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Chicola. Chiquila, sorry.
The only reason I know how to pronounce that is because Meredith Martin Motes has family from Chiquila.
Does she?
Yep.
Perfect.
Over there in Yale County.
I wasn't quite sure how to say it, but yeah.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a great weekend.